When in doubt, if you're conflicted about whether to do something or not do something, or to say yes or to say no, and you're in the middle, when in doubt, say yes. Hey everybody, this is John from the Midland Group. Thanks for tuning into this podcast. I wanted to share some really interesting tips that I think may help you, that have really helped me. And this, if you've listened to any of my episodes, I'm not doing this to become the next Joe Rogan. I'm doing this for myself to record lessons I've learned, not only for me to remember and for maybe my team or other people to remember, like yourself, but also for my kids. Like I want a little bit of a journal for them as they get older, and maybe they can reflect on this. I don't know. They're 11 right now. I have boy-girl twins, 11 years old. So I'm trying to impart the right lessons and attitudes and give them help. So I do that for that reason as well. So, but today I want to talk about if you're conflicted, like you, on a decision, on traveling to do something, to saying yes or no, whatever it is, whatever the scenario is, and I'm going to give you a few for me. I've learned that it's easier to say no to stuff, and I'm not going to go, and I'm going to stay here. But if there's a reason it's tugging at you, like your gut instinct, your intuition, call it whatever you want. God is talking to you. Whatever it is that you're feeling, just in the middle. Like you're in the middle of something. Certain things that that I think I've done. Like sometimes it's a very quick yes. That's not what I'm talking about. Or a very quick no. That's also very healthy, from what I've tried to develop. It's okay to say no to things too. Don't be just a yes person for everything. So, but it's those middle ground where your gut, your instinct, you're like, it doesn't go away. So you're confronted with a situation like, let me mull that over. Then the next day you think about it, or you talk about it, or it's maybe this is something in your family. Maybe this is whether to take a vacation with your family. It's something at church. Maybe it's something in a business. Maybe it's a client. It doesn't, it's not just a business type thing. It's a human thing. Comes back again and you're still conflicted, like, okay. And maybe again and again, and it's not going away. That is the moment. That's what I'm talking about. Those moments where you're on the fence, you're not sure what to do. Here, I can't say this has always worked out to be the best, but here, and I don't remember where I heard this. I heard this from somebody. I didn't create this. Maybe it was Jim Rohn. Maybe it was Tony Robbins. Maybe it was Jack Canfield. Les's last name, very good speaker. Maybe it's something of those that I picked up, but it was certainly not me that created this. When in doubt, when you're on the fence, when your intuition is not sure what to do, just go for it. Just do it. Because more times than not, that situation is going to be in your benefit. And there is a reason. And we don't understand the reason. And again, some people feel the reason is maybe God pushing you, or your religion pushing you, or some spiritual thing. And that is entirely possible. Some people feel it's just it's intuition. It's your gut instinct where your body feels it. I don't know the reason. I'm not going to get that deep. I'm not a scientist. I'm just saying when it happens, if you can, go with yes. Let me give you a couple examples. And these are not major life-changing examples. These are just situations where I did this. And I'm like, man, I'm glad I did. Because things happen when you say yes. And things happen when you say no. So I want to also, for me, I think I can say yes to too many things. And sometimes I say yes to stuff. And I know internally, like, I'm not going to do it. But I just don't want to disappoint them. Like, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, no problem. Yeah. Be agreeable. I'm not saying that because I think it's okay to say, you know what? I'm not sure if I can do that or not. Let me think on that. That's totally fine. Or if it's something really off limits, like, no, I'd rather not do that. And here's why, or rather not do that. I have my own personal reasons. That's fine too. So I'm talking to a company. I'm in Richmond, Virginia. I'm talking to a company in Maryland about their healthcare benefits, and I'm giving them some strategic advice, and they hire me as a consultant. Not as their broker, but they pay us a fee to do an analysis of what they're doing. And so it's an independent analysis, and I'm not biased towards whatever the decision is. I am simply presenting factual, statistical, relevant on the ground research and data, because I have a lot of experience and I have tools that I can show them, like how does their plan benchmark, how are their costs compared to their peers, how do they rank, what do they look like in terms of what they're doing to control healthcare costs and benefits. So, and it's a 15-page report with lots of great statistical data and analytical data to give them an idea of where they are, but also lots of educational material to tell them what's the most important thing to focus on. And so it's very little about Millen Group. It's very little about me. In fact, I mean, it's just like the last page is basically like, here's your decisions if you want to hire us or you want to. So that was basically, it's not a marketing document for us. It's not a bait and switch like, oh, I'm going to do this analysis, I'm going to tell you how great we are. No. This is, you're going to pay several thousands of dollars and it's going to be worth it. And when I present it to you, when I get the response of, oh, this is really worth it, thanks for doing this, then I know I've hit the mark. Like, whether you hire me or not, this is a great piece that I've created. Cough break. So I have this company in Maryland. It's about a 3-hour drive probably from Richmond. And I'm presenting these. Now, sometimes I've been presenting these on Zoom, which is perfectly fine. I can see them, they can see me, I have the document, I send the document to them ahead of time, usually to review it or right after the call, they get a copy of it, no big deal. And this is like transitioning sort of out of the COVID era. So it's now 2023, it's November 2023. And this would have been early 2023. And maybe even this, actually this was 2022. So in 2022, if you recall, it wasn't peak COVID. Like COVID started in March of 2020 is when the things started shutting down. All the way through 2020, pretty much through 2021. And then in 2022, it slowly started to ease up, right? And so a lot of people were still working from home, a lot of remote stuff. So Zoom was very popular. No one expected you to show up at their door. You weren't doing drop-ins for the most part. But I was sensing in 2022 that you could. Like, okay, now, like, no one's going to be offended if you're like, I'd like to come in person. That would have been the case in 2020, but not in 2022 and now early 2023. So I give that context because I had a gut feel early that I need to be in person with people. Now, that is harder for me because I'm not naturally a, not outgoing, what's extrovert. Being out in the market, being out with people I don't know, or even that I do know, doesn't necessarily give me energy like it does an extrovert. It doesn't take energy away from me, but I prefer not to be in that. It's just my personality. And it sounds weird when I say it to be like, wow, you're so friendly. Being friendly and being a good listener and asking questions is very different than getting energy as an extrovert when you're around people and being like, that's a different thing for people. And so I'm like, I need to go in person. I need to present this in person. And this was one of the first few times I said to them, I would prefer to come in person and meet you and go through this. Versus what I was about to say is, would you prefer to do this over Zoom or do it in person? That was what I first started writing in this email when I had it done. And I caught myself like, wait a minute, no one's going to prefer me in person. No one wants the sales guy in their office. Like, we joke about this, like, let's invite the sales guy that never leaves. That's not who I am. That's not what I do. But that's what people think. And that's fine. Because I am. I'm in sales. And that's what we do. That's what we tend to do. So yeah, I'm in that same bucket. No problem. They don't know me. But that's what they're, so I'm like, no, no, no. I'm not going to give them a choice. I prefer to come in person. What dates are you available when you have all three of you available? Because there were three people. There was a like a CFO person, chief operating officer, COO person. There was an HR director. And I knew there was a third decision maker, which was a higher level that would probably show up, right, if I was there. And sure enough, I did that. They said, no problem. I went up and there were three people in the room. And by being in person, it does a lot of different things. One, it allows me to size them up, so to speak, and not in a manipulative way, but just like shake their hand, look them in the eye, build a little bit of a rapport. I'm not there to be their friends, but just have a connection with somebody that had been disappeared for several years, 2 years maybe, right? That context had shifted. And we joke about it, like, hey, it's great to be in person. And so I did that presentation. I was able to see their body language. I was able to see when they pulled into stuff, when they leaned back. I was able to pause on different things. And so that was an example, coffee break, of going with my gut. My gut was saying, go up there. I'm like, oh God, it's 3 hours drive through Northern Virginia traffic. But I did it, and I'm glad I did. And the end result of that is I did not get that case. Even though when I walked out, I'm like, that went really well. But I learned a lot, right? I did not get that case. I'm like, oh, maybe I should have done a Zoom, right? That's what you're thinking. Another example is an organization in Texas that reached out to me and said, hey, we want ideas. Our healthcare is out of control, blah, blah, blah. Same process. They hire me as a consultant. I do an analysis. I'm done. Now it's in Texas. Now this is an air flight. Now that gut instinct is kicking in again. I could Zoom. I mean, the first Zoom call I did, they were in a conference room. There was four of them. They had all the decision makers, including like the highest level executive in the company, which was second only to the founder. So I knew, okay, I got everybody in here. I got finance, I got leadership, and I have HR. But they didn't have their camera on, but they had me. I showed myself. I always show myself on Zoom so they can see me, but I could not see any of them. And they had me on a big screen in the conference room, and I was talking to them, and I was able to kind of check it out. Hey, what's the problem? Blah, blah, blah. Get some high level thoughts. This is what I'm thinking. Is it bad enough? Or you want to make a change? And so from that, I did my analysis a few weeks later. I'm like, I'm ready to present. And now I'm conflicted. Do I fly to Texas? Like, holy cow. Now this was a pretty good sized deal for us to get. And there were things that we could definitely help them with, like the analysis show. Oh my God, I've got three viable solutions, not just one. I have three different things. One is very low disruption to the company. The next one is a little bit more disruption to the company. And the third one was a little bit, you know, fairly decent disruption to the employees. Not like the business falls apart, but to the employees having to change something. Really, I mean, this was probably one of my best designs because I incorporated that like low, mid, and high level disruption to employees. Flew down there. Very different experience at that meeting. Very short. Not a lot of interaction. Not a lot of questions. Not a lot of energy back. And in the moment, I was a little caught off guard. I wasn't prepared for it because I didn't think that would be the case. I walked in thinking, this guy's coming to Texas. He flew in here last night. He stayed the night, blah, blah, blah. We're going to make him feel good. They were nice people. They were courteous. They answered questions, but I didn't get that. I didn't get the same reaction as that first example. Like, oh, what's going on? Is it me? It must be me. It's them. It can't be them. And so the meeting was over in an hour and a half, maybe less than an hour and a half. And I walked out. And I thought this went really good. I felt really good about that. Didn't get that case. It kind of went dark on me, and the communication really dropped off. And when the communication did come in, which was, I'm like, okay, why then? I just talking to me. I'm not saying, do you want to do it? Do you want to do it? Do you want to do it? It was like, how's it going? Did you get your renewal yet? Hey, would you like to talk about some stuff? But there was no feedback of, hey, thanks, John. Yep, no, we're still talking about it. It was very sparse communication. And that was a signal that they're not interested. That is them either telling me they're not interested or they're so busy. But after a while, my gut was saying, there's something else here. It's maybe not they're not interested in my solutions. They might have been very interested, but there was some other dynamic going on of what I come to learn. Not what I've come to probably think was the issue of there's something else going on out of my control. They didn't say it, but I have enough experience now. I'm thinking, was it me? It was something else. Some other thing was happening. They got busy. There was a relationship. There was something about, there was possibly something about us. You know, they're from Virginia. I don't care what they say. They're never going to help us. We're in Texas. Even though it's healthcare, even though we have clients in different states, even though it doesn't really matter the industry they're in, because people are people and people get sick and have accidents. So that, none of that really matters. It's healthcare. It applies to any individual human. And it just, you, your strategies change by, based on the type of collection of people you have and where you are. But it's still very similar. It doesn't matter what you sell. Pipes, or you're an electrician, or you're in retail, or you're, you sell cars or fans. It doesn't matter. And so I didn't get it. And I was like, oh my God, two trips. Didn't get it. And I started to second guess my little theory that I'm talking about today. And I could tell a few more where I did go in person and I did get it. So I have other stories that show, hey, it's the right thing to do. But here's another one. We picked up a new client in New Mexico, and we are transitioning them to a more of a community-funded health plan analysis. It's a little bit different from what they had, but they were really boxed into a corner with what they had. I came in, we were able to help them, and I'm like, we usually go to all the group meetings for our clients. But I'm like, oh my God, now, you know, it's New Mexico. I could, you know, have to do this by Zoom. Get everyone in a room. And they had about, say, 70 eligible employees. And I'm like, oh, I could do this by Zoom. But early on, I sensed that, like, they were not, this new thing we're going to be rolling out was not second nature to them. The head person, like the HR and the controller and CFO, the ones running it, this was not going to be second nature to them. And I could feel it. I'm like, oh, I'm asking, you know, all they had to do is get people in a room and have a screen and have me on it. But this is a big deal. Healthcare is a big deal. You know, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it's people have questions, and it's very personal to some. Other people don't care because they're like, I don't use anything. I'm 27 and I never get sick. So some people, it didn't really matter. Like, what's the cost? Other people are like, it really matters because my child has Crohn's disease and I need prescriptions. So I said early on that I'd be glad, hey, I'll come out and do the group meetings with you. I'll be there in person to help you. And after I said it, I'm like, what is that going to cost in time? And again, the same thing on a plane and all that stuff. And that came back again. And I said it again, I will come out there. And that is a decision. And we've not yet done that part. Right. So this is, I've not yet traveled out there, but whatever happens, I think I made the right call. I was conflicted. Man, it'd be so easy to say no. You know, it's long. I could do it by Zoom and it would have been fine, but I went with yes. And I booked my ticket and hotel and a rental car. And it took me out of the game, right, locally, but this is a new client. So it wasn't like, so I was helping this new client, and I'm glad I did, because being there in person has got to be better than being there on a Zoom call. And it's got to be, it will make those two individuals that are trusting our collective decision. This is their ultimate decision to do this, not my pressuring them. Like, hey, you can stay where you are. I think will really help, because it'll give them confidence. I'll be there to back them up. I'll be there to be the subject matter expert. When anything comes up, I'll be able to help them with 98% of the questions that come up. Maybe not all, but 98%. And I'll be there. Last story. If you've hung this long, thank you. Hopefully you're getting value from this, but this is a little more of a personal scenario where I've been looking, our family's been looking at ways to protect the income we're generating in different types of investments. So, you know, you work hard, you earn income, you use some of that income. Hopefully you have some left over, or maybe you have sources from the past. Maybe you have a 401k that's running on the sidelines. Maybe you got some money from inheritance. Maybe you got a bonus from work. I don't know, but you should have this, some money that you are setting aside for the future. And I know it's hard, very hard in today's environment, 2023, to do that. it's even hard for us. This is not easy because costs have gone up. Wages are not kept up. There's other expenses that show up. You know, private schooling shows up. There's things that happen that like, oh, can derail that. But always, so I have this opportunity where I had some 401k money from a previous employer that had been just kind of sitting on the sideline. So it's there, but I've not been doing much with it. And it's basically probably losing money over time because I'm not interested in trying to gamble it in the stock market. So it's been sitting in like a money market fund. Cough break. And so I learned about an investment, a way to invest that money that feels very safe, protected, has potential to grow. And it had, in my gut instinct, after I learned about it, I felt good about it. Like my gut was like, I've seen a lot of things at 55 years old. I haven't seen everything, but I've seen a lot of different types of make money type things, or investment things. This felt different. And so I had the chance to fly to San Diego and spend 2 days with an individual, Oren Claff, and his team and other investors, 30, 40 or 50 other investors, to learn about something through his program called IPO Factory. And I highly suggest you look into it. IPO Factory, Oren Claff, K-L-A-F-F. If you don't know who Oren Claff is, he wrote a book called Pitch Anything, which I read. I met Oren when he did a training about this about 3 years ago. I was at an event again, put myself in an environment in California, cost my partner and I to fly out there, the tickets and the whole trip, I think was 10 grand easy, but it was the best 10 grand investment we could have ever made in our business. Literally, it's paid us tenfold, maybe 20-fold. So that was an amazing, but it was really hard to do that. Spend 10 grand to get there, ticket, hotel, food, rental, like you add it all up, it was 10 grand. Each of our tickets, I think, was 2,500 just to get in the door. It was 5 grand there. So, Oren Claff spoke. He had this book, Pitch Anything. I'm like, I've never heard of this book. And so I got the book and I read it and I started watching it. And so for the last 3 years, I've been training with him virtually. He didn't know it, but I've been training and being on calls and listening to his book and everything. So it's an amazing book about how to communicate with people. It's not manipulating people, and it doesn't necessarily have to deal with business. So anyways, so because I've been connected for 3 years through his emails, watching his YouTube channel, right? I'm just engaged. I haven't disconnected. I'm like, oh, I got my stuff. Stop bothering me. I've learned what I need to learn from Pitch Anything, and I do not need anything more from you. So I'm going to disconnect and unsubscribe from everything. I did not do that. I stayed engaged, and for a while there, I was paying a small monthly fee to be a part of like his insider group. And actually, I think I am still paying that fee. Actually, that's how I got it. So it was like, I don't know, $50 a month or $99 a month just to be in the environment. And I remember my partner saying, what is this for? You're paying $100. What? Can we cancel this? I'm like, no. I'm part of this. I'm in part of his environment. I'm getting stuff that he doesn't just give out. And that was another key. Just be connected to the environment, be in the same environment. And so I had the ability to learn about this investment. He's building a manufacturing plant in Dallas, Texas, starting in 2024 as part of the IPO Factory. And this is your ability to get in as an equity investor. And, you know, this is like big, these are now big time investing. And what most of which I had never heard of this type of thing. I understand what manufacturing is, but I don't understand a Series A preferred stock pre-IPO offering. I didn't know what the heck that meant at all. So I flew my butt out to San Diego for 2 days during the busiest time of year for us to learn about this and be in the environment. And it was an amazing decision because my gut kept telling me over and over, I could just do Zoom. I could just listen 2 days, Zoom. They're going to record it. They're going to be able to be live. And I can watch it later. So even if I don't want to watch it live on Zoom from my office or home in Virginia, I could do that. No, I need to be there in person. I need to be there. I need to put myself in an environment. And that's what I did. And that is a whole nother story. But that was probably that decision ranks in my head of the top five, I don't know, just top three to five things that I have done to create wealth for my family, not just now, but like, and not maybe necessarily generational wealth, meaning like it's $100 billion where my kids. I'm not talking about like multi-generation. I'm sorry, my family unit, my wife, my kids, my mother-in-law, even my sisters, like if it come to that, top five decisions, the way it's going to impact us in the future in terms of wealth creation. And so it only happened. I don't think that would have happened. It might have. But the odds went up 100-fold when I was there in person in the front row on the first seat of the front row right in front of the stage with my notes book open, pen, writing notes, having my phone, taking pictures of the slides, which is totally okay, right? This is not confidential for myself, so I didn't miss it. And it was totally worth it. And in that moment, as I looked around, and this is just, I'm veering off here, and I'll end the podcast here in a second. But just one more tip, I think, that I've done. Coffee break number six. Take notes. I was astonished that people were sitting there for two days with not taking a single note. No piece of paper, no pen. Or maybe even like some people like to type on a laptop. You know, they type their notes like in a Word document. Not even that. Some people like type it on their phone. Maybe one, two. Now, I wasn't watching everybody. I was in the front row. But I could sense as I just looked around, you know, during breaks, you can tell, like, why would you trust this to your memory? You're only going to recall 10% of what you heard or saw in about a week. It drops. And then another month, it drops more. And then at 6 months, like, it just, the law of diminishing attention just drops down so fast, you're barely going to remember that stuff. And you're spending your time. I'm like, I'm capturing as many nuggets in writing and with my phone, because he had stuff on the slides. He wasn't giving out this stuff in writing. Like, here's the whole presentation deck. And then there was a story along with it. It wasn't just, here's the facts, read it, next slide. It was a professional overview from someone that was a master communicator, a master pitch maker, a master at finance and business and banking, and at marketing and sales and positioning and storytelling and leadership, explaining a deal that you could get in on with him with very low minimums to invest alongside him in, as an equity position with preferred stock, Series A, which I've come to learn these are like really important terms when it comes to investing. So if you've listened this long, This was mind-blowing to me, because I'm like, someone came up during a break and said, I can't believe they're giving us preferred stock. I'm like, yeah, me neither. All right, what the hell does that mean? He's like, it's not common stock. I'm like, okay, cool. It's not common, it's preferred. And what does that mean? So I was there. I totally had to humble myself. Like, don't pretend. I've heard the difference. Oh, preferred is better than common. Yeah. Like, I had to humble myself and be like, I have to ask people, like, why is that important to you? Tell me from your perspective. What does that mean to you? And that's not easy to do sometimes, to be like, totally pretend like you're an idiot without acting like I wasn't an idiot, but I'm like, it sounds good, but can you tell me why that's so important? Like, from your perspective, why is that a big deal? And I would hear like things from professional investors that have done this before saying it. I know I'm getting a little animated because it must be the four sips of coffee I've had. But professional people explaining this stuff, like, oh, wow, I didn't know that. Like, oh, yeah, I was in a deal. And then they'd say something off. Like, yeah, I did a deal that it was common stock, which is still good. But then this happened. Like, you get paid first after debt and blah, blah, blah. And even Orrin doesn't have common stock. And everyone. And so I'm like, why would the investors get preferred? And Orrin, who is the creator of this whole thing, why would he not have preferred? He should have preferred. I should have common. I don't deserve common. Or preferred. Like, no, he wants the investors to have preferred. He takes common. You get paid first before him. I was like, what? That's so generous. He doesn't have to do that. He sets the rules. It's just mind-blowing. It's just so, I hope this is helpful. I don't know. It's helpful for me. I'm going to listen to this like 10 years from now, or my kids will. And we'll laugh about it. Daddy was in the car with the dog in the backseat, Maverick, 1-year-old, and he's sitting in a parking lot at the community center at Magnolia Green with the car running because it's cold out, sipping coffee. Because I want to capture and convey the magic of what I've learned. That was, where was it going? What was I saying about? So yeah, so I'm in this environment because I'm there. And my gut, back to my gut. So at the end of the, I forget what I was just saying. I apologize. I've totally lost my train of thought, but it doesn't matter. I'm just going to ramble a little bit. There is something important coming. What is coming next? So I was there, preferred. So investing this thing, it's because I trust in my gut, right? So, okay. So it's trusting my gut. The first day I'm on the front row, and this is just something else. I don't like being in the front row. When you walk into an event and you have the chairs. So imagine you walk into a room. There's this really nice screen and a stage, like a little stage, a little high, like raised up 3 feet, maybe 4 feet. And then there's this screen. It's a massive, it must be 40 feet wide, 12 feet high, and it's curved. So it's a continuous screen that when he puts things on it, it's not like projected down onto it from something from the ceiling. I don't know how he does it, but it's like digital. It's like this massive TV screen that's curved and it fills the whole screen. It's insane. It's really cool. So I put myself right in the front row in the first seat. Nobody had put, a couple people started putting their things in the seats totally in the back row. So if you imagine, it's got maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or 7 rows of seats. Maybe on the left side, there were maybe 5 seats, right side 6, something like that, right? So it's 40 seats are out, 40 to 50 seats. Nobody's sitting in on the first 2 rows. I'm like, you know what? I flew my ass out here. I've been up since 4 a.m. Pacific time because it was really like 7. I think I got up at 3:30. I had already been up for like 4 hours. Because of the time change, I like sprang out of bed at 4 a.m. The event didn't start till 8:30 or 9. So I, you know, had a lot of stuff done. So I sat in the front seat, ready to go, and everyone was behind me. And then he made a comment like, hey, buddy, up to the front row. And then they finally came to the forward. So front row, notebook, pen, and my journal, right? I have my journal that I take with me everywhere, a pen, my glasses. I almost forgot my glasses. That would have been bad. And my phone for pictures. And I knew it was being recorded, so I didn't record the audio part. And I was ready to go. So my gut was saying, sit in the front row. Sit in the front row. Even though you look like a dork in the front row. Oh, there's a guy in the front row. Teacher's pet. Like all this weird shit shows up in your brain when you're an adult. Like teacher's pet, oh, you're in the front row. It's none of that. It's like, I want to get full dose. I don't want anyone in front of me. I don't want some big head in front of me hiding. I don't want to pretend like I'm there and be on my phone. Oh, that's tempting. Oh, yeah. I want to be checking my emails and checking the deal flow while I'm gone and looking at stuff and, you know, maybe not paying attention. He won't know. I'm in the back row behind a couple people. He won't be able to see what I'm doing. Nope. Phone off. Except for the camera, totally attentive. I'm like, I am being blessed and honored to be in this room, to be invited into this room. I was allowed to be in this room. I am being blessed by some higher power, I am sure. I'm not sure exactly how. Still working through that myself, like how that all works, but I'm pretty sure this, I'm meant to be here, and I made a decision, and I'm going to get good things out of this because my gut is just saying yes. It's just saying do it. I don't know why. I don't know what I'm going to learn. I don't know what's going to happen here. I didn't even know what the investment was. When you showed up, I had no idea what I was going to be investing in because he was unveiling it at the event. So it's not like, tell me what it is. Tell me the type of company that we're going to invest in. What do they make? What's the name? What's the pricing? What's the demand? Like, I didn't know any of that shit. He had had calls leading up to it, building the case for what was happening and how do you evaluate deals and what's a good deal versus a bad deal, which was insanely valuable for anybody. Had nothing to do with this particular investment deal. It had to do with when you are presented with an opportunity of a company, how do you evaluate it? What do you look at? That was information about the story the company has, the management team, the financial controls, the market demand, regulatory changes. There's probably a few more I'm missing. Those are all things that they look at when evaluating deals. And he's done 250 equity deals in his career, over $1 billion of transactions. He knows what he's talking about. 250 times he's looked at companies going, you have a great story, great product, but your financials suck and you have no board of directors. And where's the demand? Like, he's so good after that many times, the five components that he looks for, most of them are missing four of the five. They have one, a visionary leader with a great story and very charismatic. And they're like, this is the product or service, blah, blah, and that's what most, and they're missing all the other fours. Or they have two and they're missing three, whatever it is. He's so good that I'm like, I'm going to capture these lessons. And I did that on all those calls leading up. So I joined right away his IPO Factory. There's a small fee you pay, a small annual fee you pay for access. So I got over that real quick because I had listened earlier a couple months ago to Brian Rose, who is in England, who runs something called London Real. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but he's really good too. London Real, R-E-A-L. He interviews people. He's an amazing interviewer. He lets people talk. He guides. It's like really, really good stuff. He's very successful. He seems like a good person. He wants to help people. Very similar characteristics you're seeing here. Grant Cardone, I have that feeling. I know that about him. Oren Claff, I definitely know that feeling about him. Brian Rose, I've never met him, but I see that. It seems like the same thing. Brian Rose comes out and says, hey, I'm doing an investment club where I'm seeing these deals are coming to me and I want you to invest with me. So this is a little different than the IPO Factory, but it's kind of like, hey, it's not crowdfunding, but it's, I have this group of people. If you join the group, you will be presented with these things that I am investing in and you can say yes or no, right? That's it. His group was $50,000 just to get in. And I was ready to do, as he was walking through this, I was on a live call with him. There was maybe, I don't know, 12, 15 people. And he made us keep our cameras on. Like, if you turned your camera off and wasn't looking at him, he would just kick you out of the call. It was like really an interesting tactic, but I did. I was like, I'm listening. He'd call on you. So, John, what do you think about that? Yeah. It's like, holy crap. Like, I didn't expect to be called on. I'm just listening. So anyways, and he's like, and I'm like, oh, I'm in. This is amazing. Yeah, I would love to at least see these. And the minimums are whatever they are. They're like, it's not crazy money. You don't have to have $1 million. You don't have to be accredited all the time, accredited investor. You can just do this. And man, I'm really rambling. 38 minutes. Anyways, 50 grand. I'm like, oh, I thought about it. I'm like, that's a good deal. I could pull 50 grand out of maybe my 401k or something. And then get access. Cause look, if you're getting a deal and you put investment in a deal, let's say, I don't know, 25 grand and you can get a 3x return. You can triple that money in, let's say, 2 or 3 years. That's a good return. So forget about the 50 grand. You've made your money back but that was not feasible. So Oren comes along a year later, 6 months, 9 months later. Similar, but his fees are, and I'm not going to say what they are. You need to go and learn about what the fees are because they might change. They're very reasonable. I was like, it's almost too low for the whole year. That's all I pay for the entire year. It's like a membership fee. It's like, think about it as a Costco fee. He says it's the Costco model. I'm not adding a bunch of fees to the deal. I'm not taking a percentage of the increase from the deal. I'm not taking management fees. So they don't do any of that. There's no 2% management fee. There's no 20% off the top for the house when deals are sold or made. You're in the deal with him without fee. So like, oh my God, you don't have to do that either. You should be doing a percentage of the gain because you did the deal. But nope, they don't do any of that. It's a small little fee. So anyways, get past the fee because they do that to weed people out. Like, you got to put some skin in the game. Otherwise, you have a bunch of crap people that show up that wants free stuff and just annoy the hell out of everybody and ask stupid questions and will never, ever make a commitment. That is not at that at his level. That's why Brian Rose probably did it. At his level, he does not need to waste time. He's earned the right to have a filter, a barrier, a little wall you have to cross over. They've earned that right because they don't want to be bombarded with 500 people that just annoy the crap out of them with questions and overwhelm the system for people that will never spend $5. And so they put these barriers. And now I'm starting to realize, because at first I was like, oh, why would you charge? Why am I being charged? Everything's free. Then I realized if something is free, it's not really free. You are paying for that some other way. In most cases, not always, right? YouTube is free. And you can watch videos on YouTube all day long for free. But they're tracking you, right? And they're sending advertisements your way. So, but you can still reject all that. I'm just saying, when it comes to moving up the food chain, being in an environment with people, if you want to get better, requires a commitment. And this comes from Grant Cardone. You have to commit time, energy, or money. Pretty sure that's it. It's definitely money, and it's definitely time and energy, or it's time, energy, and something. But you have to commit one of that, a bunch of time, a bunch of your energy and sweat, or money. And in this case, you have to commit money to get into the environment, to get inside the Costco warehouse, right? To see, you know, the stuff's cheaper and you know the Jif is like half the price or less than half of Jif at Kroger. You have to pay the fee to buy the Jif, right? It's no different. You have to pay a fee to be a part of the environment to see the deals, and all it takes is one, and you can put in $1,000. There's a very low minimum threshold on these. I think $1,000 is what it is. Like, that's nothing. To have an equity in a company with someone that's worth eight figures, it's just mind-blowing. When the more I think about it, I'm like, this is why I talk about it, but I talk about it in a very professional way, not a salesy way, not like I'm not trying to solicit this, because there are very strict regulations about these types of things. I'm just saying, check it out. Like, put yourself in an environment. I put myself in that environment. I'm not saying you have to put yourself in that environment. I'm saying that one day someone says, hey man, I got this thing, would love for you to take a look at it. And you're like, no, I don't look at things because I'm closed-minded. But my gut's saying, I should probably look at it. Nah, I should. Nah, I don't know. What do I do? Go look at it. You're an adult. You can say no. There's no harm in looking and saying, no, thanks. Hey, I appreciate it. No, thanks. But what's natural tendency, as I wrap this up, is that we tend to say no. And I did that. And I do that. I do that all the time still. I don't know. Yes. Nah, there's got to be a reason. Oh, it's a scam. No. I wouldn't be interested. I'm not going to have fun. Whatever it is, it's the no. I'm saying from now on, if you're really conflicted and it's more than just one time, say yes. Make the decision. All right. This is probably my longest podcast. Hopefully, my kids will enjoy this someday. And I hope you have a great day. And if it's valuable, let me know.